Geraint Wyn-Davies is a Welsh-Canadian actor who has starred in numerous plays, movies, and television shows since his debut in 1977. We met Mr. Davies in September of 2023 and completely lost our minds. After we came to, we had one goal in mind: watch everything he has ever been in so that next time we're ready. How has this man made a career out of making out on screen? Will this be enough to help us make it through the next meeting, still conscious? This isn't a podcast. It's an inoculation.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Meg, and this is Gare Can Get It. This week, we send some more mixed messages to a curly-haired coroner. Can you guess what we're watching? I think you'll be wrong.
If they gave awards for makeouts on screen or stage, this guy would get a lifetime achievement. He'll find any excuse to get right to suck and face. You honestly wouldn't believe it. Dissecting each and every kiss with tongue. There's only one conclusion to come to. It's that Gare can get it.
These were so cute. I have been waiting for Murdoch Mysteries for so long. I like them so much with my heart. Like, they don't make 100% sense all the time, but they're just sweet and they're nice, and like Gare gets to go full on Gare in every episode. Like, I just, it's like Frankie Drake, but better.
But better.
Do you know what I mean? I don't mind Frankie Drake. I actively enjoy Murdoch Mysteries. I really do. I feel like a happy little old lady. I want to like drink a cup of tea and like do some knitting and watch my murder of the week. Like, I like it so much. And Yannick Pisson, who plays Murdoch, why can't I think of his first name? Detective Murdoch. He's real easy on the eyes. I don't like that it turns out that he's 50. Because that hurts my brain a little bit. I was like, no, he's like 35,
but he has like,
Mm-hmm. Thank you. No. Yeah, he is.
What? He's a
like 10
bit
years
balding.
Younger than Gare.
I did notice he's a little bit balding. I noticed sometimes the hair shellac is very strategic.
Oh, you know what? That's fine. That's like, cool. You know who else is balding? Nigel Bennett. And we didn't mind there. So,
well, I don't care about the bald. I always feel bad for the actors that are like, you start out your career as like the hot young 20 and then you hit 30 and all of a sudden you start to get a bald spot. It must feel like, no.
Oh, I mean, that shit. Is true. So Murdoch Mysteries has been around since 2008. Oh, sorry. It's Detective William Murdoch. I don't know why I always forget his first name, but, so it's been around since 2008. So I think they just said that they're on like season 17. So like, if you really want to watch him not age very much, I don't know, maybe Gare gave him some vampire magic, but like he's older at the end. But like, my problem is I've kind of skipped around. Like, I've been like, oh, where are the Forever Night people? Which episodes are they in? And like, those are the ones that I've mainly watched. Cause Nigel plays, I don't remember his name, but he plays like a superintendent, like a police superintendent, in some later seasons. And he's got a bunch of episodes, like 5 or 6 in a row. So I kind of like, but that's like season like 10 or 11 or 12. Like, it's further along. So I've watched the Gare episodes. I've watched the one Kathy episode, which like was fine. Like, it used her better than I thought it was going to be based on how it started. But like, I still feel like it could have used her more, but it was like fine, but she's in the one. And then, I've seen most of the 5 or 6 that Nigel's in. I don't like, John Capelos is in everything everywhere all the time. I don't think he's been in a Murdoch Mysteries episode. So I haven't.
Maybe because it's so Canadian.
Maybe he's like, I live in Los Angeles now. I've outgrown my Canadian roots.
For some reason, I thought this was British. And I was looking on, my mom has like every British streaming service. So I was looking
on
them.
It's on Acorn.
And I was like, well, I thought this was British.
Yeah. We like to, if you squint your eyes at Canada, we like to pretend that we're British. So what happens is our TV shows, half of the actors will be British expats. And then the other half are Canadian actors doing British accents. And then we will be on British streaming services because like, you know where like what we want to be.
Yeah.
Anyways. But it's on Acorn. It's on like YouTube, weirdly. Like, you can purchase individual episodes on YouTube. And then
Prime.
And is it on Prime? Okay, I hadn't.
Yeah, I watched it on Prime.
Okay, I hadn't gotten through the entire. I don't know. It's available more places than I expected based on it being like a Canadian old timey crime show. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, Rachel's never going to be able to find this, and like for it to be anywhere, I was like, oh, like pleasantly surprised. But yeah. But yeah, he is. So Yannick Besson is now 54. He has, what's he, one, two? He's got three kids, at least two of the daughters have been guest stars on various episodes. And so when I saw, because I went down a YouTube rabbit hole, I'm not going to lie. So I was on YouTube and I was like, Yannick Besson, pretty eyes, what up? So I'm like Googling. And they're like, and there's all these like little like behind the scenes CBC like clips, like here's how you make this, here's how the show is made, here's interviews with the actors, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, Yannick Besson's daughters were in a couple episodes. And so I'm expecting like toddlers because this man does not age. Like he is permanently like 35. And then these like
early 30s.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. These like 22-year-old girls come out and they're like, oh, our dad, he's so silly. And I was like, not. I mean, like I'm very happy for him that like he's aged the way he's aged, but like it's put a little weird kink inside my brain, like a little bit. Like it's just been a little bend like, in half. But yeah, no, he is super hot.
Even my mom thought he was hot. I watched this with my mom because she likes British mysteries. And I was like, oh, you'll like this, thinking it was British. Well, it was fine because it's still basically British.
So British
she
liked adjacent, it,
but she was like, oh, he's really handsome. I was like, yeah.
He is. It's like, I like it for like the cute old-timey murder mystery. I like it because it's Canadian. I like it because it has all these Canadian actors. And like a lot of even like Canadian actors who've made it big in the States, like Victor Garber. I found out he's been in like at least an episode. So like, I don't know. I'm sure there's others but like, I feel like for an American audience, everyone knows Victor Garber. He was in Sweeney Todd. He was in Legally Blonde. Like he's, you know, like he's like a big deal, I feel like.
Yeah.
So there've been like a lot of like Canadian actors who've made it big and then come home to like help support Little Murdoch Mysteries. But like Yannick Besson being so like, that doesn't hurt. I'm not mad about it.
His eyelashes are so long and so dark. He looks like he's wearing guy liner.
I know, but he's not. It's just all natural, baby.
My little like high school goth heart with the guy was like, is he wearing guy liner? I am not mad.
I feel like watching Yannick Besson, I feel like what I was supposed to feel watching Adrian Paul from Highlander.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like the cleaned up, not sweaty, not gross, not ponytail version of that guy. And yeah. I'm like, okay, I get it now. I get it. If you were like put in a washing machine like six times and you popped out, you would be Yannick Besson and I'd be into it. Like, I get it. I understand. Okay. And it would also wash the kung fu off of you. Yeah. No, I thought, yeah. Mm-hmm.
With some guy liner. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got good eyes. Yeah. Anyways. Wait, our next series, Yannick Besson, clearly can also get it.
Yannick can. Oh.
I don't know. We'll have to think of a quality name. Mm. I don't think he's been in a lot of stuff other than Murdoch Mysteries because, like, how do you have time to do anything else? This is 17 seasons. So
clearly it's a series where we just do all 17 seasons of Murdoch Mysteries.
Yeah. Yeah, we just go through every single murder. Oh, my God. But, yeah, no, if you're looking for like something cute and fun to watch with like a super hot guy whose guy liner comes to him naturally, Murdoch Mysteries, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
So as we got distracted by like hot men are distracting. I don't know what it is. It's just that, I mean, she said on her podcast, Gare can get it. I know. I got needs.
Me
okay, so.
Get totally lost in a male actor? No, never, never.
No, right? No, we have a very clear boundary between reality and fiction.
We just prefer to live in the fiction land.
Yeah. No, it's fun.
It's better.
It's totally fine.
There's hot guys here who aren't gross.
So we'll be discussing all three episodes of Murdoch Mysteries that Gare has guest starred in. He's always playing the same character, which is nice because I think with Murdoch Mysteries being so long running, like sometimes people pop up and they're like, I'm a new guy. And you're like, you're Garrett Wynn Davies. Come on.
You're the same guy.
I know you. So,
I know you.
He's always playing Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the writer of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries. And like, just because I can't help myself, like clearly there's something wrong in my brain. I was like, isn't Sir Arthur Conan Doyle Scottish? I was like, I'm pretty sure he's Scottish. So I Googled it because I can't help myself. He was Scottish. And so then my next question was like, I was like, wouldn't he have a Scottish accent? Like, Did he live so long ago that there would not be any like video or audio evidence of what he sounded like? So I Googled, because again, I can't help myself. And there are video clips of him actually speaking, and he was Scottish. He sounded just like Sean Connery. He was very fucking very Scottish. And I was like, why do we never, is it because Sherlock Holmes, like we know he lives in London, and so we're like, therefore, we like London wash all of every aspect of it. So like, I was like, I wish, like Geir does such a good Scottish accent. I know we've heard him do it. Well, we heard it in Ikwe, of which we shall not speak further. But I know we've heard him do it in... Oh no! Wait, was it an Irish accent he did in the one episode of Forever Night when he's in the church? I know we've heard him do.
Yeah, no, the church is Irish. Yeah,
he's Irish. Okay, I know we've heard him do Scottish at some point other than Ikwe, but like even based on Ikwe, like I know he can do it. And he bears like a pretty strong physical resemblance, at least like the size that he was at the time he did Murdoch Mysteries.
He
bore a fairly strong resemblance to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, even though they like. Like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle like had a giant mustache, like, and there's lots of pictures of him with his giant mustache, and they like gave Geir a giant mustache, but like not that giant mustache. And I was like, why could you had a fucking picture? You got like, it's not like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a guy that no one's ever seen. Yeah. It's like a guy that's like famous for his big fat walrus mustache. And they were like, what if we added a soul patch? And I was like, oh, soul patch, just like Roy from the Outer Limits episode.
Oh my God, it's a callback.
It's a deep cut reference to an earlier.
It's not that long before this. Isn't the Outer Limits episode, isn't one of them 2007?
Oh, it might have been. Yeah. Yeah, he might have been like thinking about Roy in his heart. That's I fully believe.
And 08, I think 08's the first, because he's in first season. He's like season one, episode four.
For Murdoch? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all coming together. Add another string to my workboard. So I was like, okay, like it just feels like, I don't know. Like when you have like a reference, so the one thing I don't like about Murdoch Mysteries, and I like almost everything about it. The one thing I don't like is they will have like actors come in playing real life people, and they will like undercut their real life successes. Like in two or three I think it's all three actually of the episodes that Geir is in, he's playing Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and they didn't just like let him be Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. They're like, he's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, but like also the fake Murdoch Mysteries characters inspired him and like gave him like what the new plots should be in his stories. And I'm like, but you're taking away then from like a thing that this real man did in his real life. You're like, no, it's actually this fake character I just made up who's just as smart as Sherlock Holmes, who's just as smart as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and inspired him. And like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle stole from these guys, and that's how he got all of his amazing stories. He wasn't that great. It was this character I just made up like 2 seconds ago. And I'm like, that feels a little masturbatory for your TV show. Like, no, like it was our fake character who like did, I don't know. It like, they, I've seen a couple of the other episodes, like Tesla pops up at one point. And I think they did something similar with like, oh, William Murdoch like invents a thing, and then Tesla's like, oh, like I'm going to be inspired by your thing, and that'll help me invent my thing. And I was like, I mean, Tesla be Tesla. Let Sir Arthur Conan Doyle be Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Like, why can't your character just be impressed with like a real person instead of being like, fuck you, dude, I invented it first. Like, no, you didn't. Like, you're not real. You're not a real person. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it bumped me out a little bit because it feels like it's taking away from the history.
I mean, I get it, but I like how autistic Murdoch is.
Where he's going to discuss
I'm
that.
I'm flirting with you. I have made you a gadget. I've made you a thing. I was like, I know. Oh, this is so cute. I mean, I get where they're just trying to like tie it in. I get it. It's just for fun. Like everyone knows that's not where that came from. So
I know. It just like on a human accomplishment level, it sort of bums me out because it's them like. Like rewrite history so that your guy meets like a fake guy, like whatever, but like rewriting history so that you're taking away or diminishing real life accomplishments, just kind of like.
Well, isn't Hounds of the Baskerville the first Sherlock Holmes book?
I am going to admit something. I've never actually read a Sherlock Holmes story. I know.
Think it's, that Hounds of the Baskerville is the very first one. In fact, so I think that's what they're referencing when they're talking about it in Forever Night, and he meets I know. He
met Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, then he became Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is inspired by his vampire dog to write The Hounds of the Baskervilles.
I forgot about that.
Well, that's, I think, is supposed to be a joke because the Matt Murdock, like, not, no, God, Matt Murdock, like, he's the, like, it's Daredevil, sorry. Murdock Mysteries guy, like, the captain is telling him about, like, it's like the Hounds of the Highlands. I think it's supposed to be a joke.
Yeah.
Like, he's already written.
No, no, yeah. Well, he's like, I mean, obviously, that's what they're referencing, the Hounds of the Baskervilles, but it's, at the end, Gare's like, I think I'll use that, and I'm going to write a story. And I was like...
Yeah, but I think it's because he's already written it. Like, he's already written The Hounds of the Baskervilles, so, like, The Hounds of the Highlands would just be... giving him the ideas that he already has used.
I mean, I would like that to be...
I think what that's the what show the joke meant, is.
But the way, but like the way that it plays out, like, I don't know, the way that I interpreted it was Gare being like, oh, shit, that does sound like a good story. One second, writing this down.
No, I think it's supposed to be a joke. Like, I think it's supposed to be he's giving him ideas, but they're the same as what he's already written. Because by the time we pick up with Arthur Conan Doyle in the Murdock Mysteries, he's done. He's already written the Moriarty Sherlock death scene.
I know, because then they talk about how we're going to bring him back.
Yeah, are you going to write any more? And he's like, no, I don't, not right now. And it's because, like, famously, Arthur Conan Doyle hated Sherlock.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
He was tired of writing him, and so he killed him off. And so that's where we pick up, is he's killed him off.
The way that I interpreted it is at the end, it just seemed like Gare was like actively like, oh yeah, no, if I bring him back, I'm going to use that. But you're right. Like, at this point, the character is supposed to be dead, and we know that Hound of the Baskervilles, like, happened. It just seemed like the way that they were, I don't know, like the way that Gare was interacting with him, with Breckenridge? Why can't I think of his name? Thomas, the inspector, the head guy. The way they were interacting is, it seemed sort of like he was at first like, I don't want to do Sherlock Holmes. Like, leave me alone, leave me alone, leave me alone. Oh, wait, that's a good idea. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, after a while, he's using him as a way to stay on the case. Like, every time Murdock's getting in trouble, he'll be like, oh, do you... Tell me more about your idea for the book that you want me to write.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And maybe that's... Not the point. What's the word I'm looking for? Maybe that's like what he's doing. Because you're right. He's like, he knows the inspector is like enamored with him. And so he's like, oh yeah, no, if I act like I'm interested in your story. But it just, to me, it seemed like towards the end, like he's using him, like, if I nod at you that, and like, you let you tell me your story, then we'll like, I'll get to keep looking at the case and keep like trying to use Murdock to like use him to pattern a new character after. And like, I still get to like be involved with all the seance stuff. And then it just seemed like there's like that one scene at the end where he's like, oh, wait, actually. And he like pulls out his little notebook and he's like writing shit down. I think I'm going to call it, because doesn't the guy want to call it like Hounds of the Highlands? And Gare's like, no, that's not a classy enough name. What if we call it the Hounds of the Moors? No, not quite right. Like, it seemed like he was like working on.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, it turns. So that's the other. The other thing I have a problem with Murdock Mysteries, and I like this show. I like this show a lot. I feel like I'm like, here's my problem. Here's my list of grievances. But like, the other problem I have is like, I feel like, okay, so I feel like if I watch a Law and Order episode, I'm not really paying attention so much to like the nuances and the details. I'm just like, okay, you thought it was that guy, then you thought it was that guy. Uh-oh, now it's this guy at the end, and like, I don't care. With this, it's sort of like that, but like once you, if you pay at all any attention to like the actual plot, I feel like you get to the end and you're like, wait a minute. Wait, how did you knew with it? How did you, what? Like, where did the, do you know what I mean? Like, I'll get there in the one with the creepy fucking ventriloquist dummy. But there are things where you're like, plot-wise, I don't know what you think happened. You've said here contradicts the thing you said 35 seconds ago.
What do you think what do you think I think? Like, what do you think I think I know? Like, what do you think you just told me?
Yeah, which is like which is I think exactly the point of disagreement with Hounds of the Baskervilles. With the puppet episode, like it's totally made up characters. You could do whatever the hell you wanted. And like your own internal timeline doesn't seem to make any kind of fucking sense. Like that's, and like, I know that's not what the show is for. The show is for like beautiful Yannick Besson and his beautiful eyes.
Yeah, and, no, that's the entire point of the show.
I know.
They're like, I'm sorry, we know why you're here. The plot is, it's like Forever Night. Sometimes you get to the end of Forever Night and you're like, I don't know what happened, but I was really entertained. I don't care.
I mean, that is true. That is true. The nightmare that is Vampire Dog only like dawns on you like 6 hours after that episode has ended. And you're like, wait a minute.
What just happened? I don't understand. There's definitely ones where they forget plot. They just drop the murder. Right? They never solve it. They don't wrap it up. They're just like, you don't care. We don't care. Nobody cares. Have a hot guy.
With Forever Night, it's like the writers are like, we don't care. You don't care. And we all agree. With this show, they're like, no, we got it. And then you're like, do you have it? I feel like you don't have it. You think you have it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. Like, we've gotten so off track. We've been discussing like the whole like essence of Murdoch Mysteries, which is of course Yannick Besson's Beautiful Eyes. But we're not here to discuss Yannick Besson's Beautiful Eyes. We're here to discuss someone else's beautiful eyes, Garrett Windeatt. Okay. Yeah. So I am going to try so hard to get through these episodes without getting off track. But that's, you know, we get off track. That's what we do. Okay. So the very first episode that Gare is in is season 1, episode 4, Elementary, My Dear Murdoch. It's from 2008. I'm just going to say this real quick. I know that Elementary, My Dear Watson is only from Sherlock Holmes movies and is not from the stories. It pisses me off a little. Okay, we're done. We're good. I'm moving on. So.
We also never cover why they're going to meet in the first place.
Thank you. Thank you. Gare doesn't even know. He's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm double booked. Let me correct myself. I think, so there's like some, he keeps bringing up some reference to like, I want to write about someone who's not Sherlock Holmes. And I think you'd be a good model. But like, William Murdoch is clearly, like, as a fictional character, he's clearly, like, a Sherlock Holmes type. So the fact that you would, like, write Sherlock Holmes, be dumb with Sherlock Holmes, and then be like, you know what I should do? I should base my new character on a guy that is basically Sherlock Holmes feels sort of like...
I think we hit that more in the second one. This one, it's just sort of like, oh, hey, I know you were going to meet me, but I'm double booked. Let's go get in this cot. Like, let's get in this cab and ride off.
Yeah, they definitely spend very little time with it. I thought there'd been, like, some comment about the writing, but, like... These two episodes blur together for me into like one big, I know they're not a two-parter, like there's episodes in between, but in my head, they live as like one big fat double feature, basically.
Yeah, no, do you know it's what I mean? Really like, just like, now kiss, boop. Like they do not, there's no setup. They're just like, Murdoch was going to meet Arthur Conan Doyle. Why?
Yeah, I like that Murdoch also seems confused. He's like, why are we meeting? And Gare's like, just get in the car. Just get,
get in the fucking car. It's like, okay, fine.
Here I come with my beautiful eyelashes
because we need this. I was in town. They gave me a pack of beer. Look, $50. Get in the fucking car, Murdoch.
I know. So that is
don't waste this fake mustache. The glue is itchy.
Oh my god, it's such a characteristic. He gets to wear old-timey clothes, a giant fake mustache. He throws in whatever these fucking accent he feels like.
I'm not mad at these clothes. I am not mad at these clothes.
I'm not mad at them for the first two episodes, but like, and in the final where they clearly just like found him next door rehearsing some other play.
He was like, you want to be Arthur? And he was like, yeah, sure. I'm here. It's fine.
All right.
I'm in town for the weekend. Can I have $50 and 2 6-packs of beer? And they were like, yes, Mr. Davies.
You drive a hard bargain. Give him a Gare special.
Can I have a week to grow this mustache? 3 days tops. Okay, fine. That's fine. That's fine.
Straw boater hat? Like, where did you even find that? Okay, we're distracted already. Okay, no. All right, I got this. All right, season 1, episode 4, Elementary, My Dear Murdoch. So, Gare plays Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. He's dressed well. His mustache is weird and sort of accurate. His accent is weird and not at all accurate. It's fine. We don't care. Hot old man, hot slightly less old man, into a car. Off we go. So, they're going off to a seance. Murdoch doesn't know why, because again, we don't know why they were meeting, and neither
don't
does Murdoch.
Know why.
Show doesn't care. So, but Gare is like, yeah, no, I was going to meet you and also go to a seance, and the seance seems cooler, so get in the car. So they go, actually, wait, didn't the medium knew that he was going to be there? So it wasn't like, but I thought that's why they have the whole na-na-na-na dead body. I don't know. The show makes no fucking sense. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're going to get through
this. You're right. I don't know.
It's...
I don't know.
We're going to do the best we can with the amount of plot that we have.
Her little buddy is like, oh, I saw somebody get buried. And she's like, cool, I got to tell somebody. Maybe she was just planning on telling Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I maybe it wasn't Sir at the time. Arthur Conan Doyle.
What was he going to do? Do you mean like he's not tell a police the police? I thought no, but I thought Mrs. Pensall like knew. Am I gonna have to? I'm gonna have to rewatch this again, and we'll have like a fucking sequel. Okay, so for whatever reason, this show like again, this show doesn't care about the plot. It just moves bodies in fancy dresses in old timey Toronto locations.
Yeah, poof.
Which okay, together, can we, this is characters. Like this is like totally an aside, but like because I went down such a deep rabbit hole of like. Behind the scenes clips on the CBC, they had a little thing where it's like, oh, you can do a tour of the Murdoch Mystery set. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. That sounds really cool. You know, like they're like, sometimes the actors are there, but even if they're not, you can see like, here's the set that's the coroner's lab. And here's the set that's like the police station. And like, then they take you in like a big touring bus, like to actual old timey sites that they use for different things in the show. And I was like, oh, that sounds so great. That sounds wonderful. And they like, they include your hotel and they include your food. And I was like, Rachel and I should do that. Whether Rachel wants to or not, we'll do it. It'll be fun. So then I looked up how much it was. And it is for like a week. And they include your tour bus and your hotel and like all the sites and shit. So like if you had to pay to go and see a site, no, you don't.
Yeah.
But like it was like $6,000. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, I was like, he better fucking cow blink his beautiful cow eyes at me. I think it was like $6,000 Canadian and like 5,000 like $900 US. And I was like,
can I have his brand of guyliner when I'm done? Like you give
he
me
he applies his- it himself. He comes up to you and he's like, close your eyes. Beautiful.
What? $6,000?
$6,000, yeah. And they only do it. It's not one of those things that's like always running. It was like there's like one weekend or something in I want to say like October maybe. It's like wow. One weekend where they do like two of these and then you have to wait till next season. And I was like, I really want to do it, but like the short like the version where like I just go to the set and I can like look around and like see where they film shit and then cuz like you can Google like it's like Forever Night. You can Google like where did they film this scene, and they're like, "Oh, that's the Museum of Science and Technology in Hamilton or whatever." Or you can go here, like this is the Pioneer Village in Toronto. Like you can see all the places. It's like listed because there's people like us who like that shit. So I'm like, I can be my own coach bus driver. I can buy myself a sandwich
for
and I can stay
far
in a hotel
less than six
for
grand.
Less than $6,000. But like, can I just like come up to the fence on the set and like peer my head over and like look at some old timey mysteries?
We saw most of the Forever Night sites with like a bus pass and some footwork.
Yeah. Well, this
and
is
a lunch.
I know that like a lot of these because they want like buildings that are preserved and old timey. Like it would be like longer and more effort than just being in downtown Toronto and being like this bus, that bus, the subway. Like a lot of the sites are in Hamilton, but Hamilton's like an hour. It's not super bad. And like some of the other ones are like in like parks and in people's estates. So like maybe those are things you couldn't visit on your own because they have like an agreement. Okay, we'll be out of our house for like an hour on a Thursday or whatever, and you bring the tour bus by. Like I get that, but like for most of the sites, they are like. Either like public streets that just still, like I think there were some streets in Hamilton that just still kind of look like they're 1870. So you could just walk up and see the cobblestones and shit, or they're museums and shit. So I pay my $10 and I get to walk in and I get to look at all the old timey stuff. Like, great.
Yeah.
Not $6,000, but like,
no,
I saw it. And I was like, I want to do it. Anyways. So, when this podcast becomes monetarily lucrative.
Yeah, no, we could put a Kickstarter. Send Meg and Rachel to go see the
yeah, and like one
the
of the
thing.
What do they call those things on Kickstarter where it's like if you like reach this level, then we just get funded, but then there's like extra like add-ons
stretch
like you reach this
goals.
Stretch goals. So the stretch goals would be like we get to like the next level and we get to like we get our own little Murdoch Mysteries outfits. We get to like show up.
Yes, we go as old timey people. Yes. And then the biggest stretch goal is like we invite Gare to come as Arthur Conan Doyle.
Bring him a case of beer and like two sandwiches and a box of Timbits.
Be fine. Be fucking fine. You know that's what he gets paid. It's fine.
I know. I know. He does it for the love of the job. The love of the genre.
The third episode he did. Yeah. No, the third episode was for some Timbits. Yeah. No, he got paid for these. These he did a good job. He's I was so impressed. He's okay. So good in these.
We're good. Yeah. Okay, we literally have not gotten through the first 12 seconds of this episode. I'm trying so hard, but I keep getting so distracted. Okay. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and William Murdoch, beautiful Yannick Besson, they go to a seance at Mrs. Pencil's house. And she is a famous medium, and she's sitting there, and she's doing a seance with this guy whose name I wrote down and then forgot. It is Conrad Hunt. And so Conrad Hunt wants to speak to his dead son, James. And I think James died of consumption, because I feel like every dead person in all three episodes just happened to have consumption. That was like
They just took too young.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you paid more attention than I did. He died of death.
So consumption. Yeah, probably.
So they're trying to do a seance with him, and there's like, I don't know, like two other people there just to like finish doing the hand holding that everyone has to do at a seance, apparently. Oh, we should do a seance in Toronto. Okay, add that to the list. All right. So they're sitting there so they go to Mrs. Pencil's house, they go to the medium's house, they do a seance. Conrad Hunt is there trying to contact his dead son, which apparently he does like once a day, every day since the kid died. And then all of a sudden, the medium is like, actually dead kid isn't here right now, but there's a lady. I wonder what the lady wants to talk about. And it's like, I have been murdered, and here's where I've been buried. Here's the exact GPS coordinates. Avenge me. And I was like, cool. All right. So,
okay.
So they go like, it's the, I'm going to give you like the short version, because otherwise, because we're distracted by everything. So the short version is they go to where the medium had said the body was. They find a body. It turns out it was this lady whose name is not important. We don't care. She was a member of the Toronto Paranormal Society, which I feel like I have a hard time explaining their raison d'être. They're like, what is the English for that? That like, they're like,
but
they're
it,
like,
how do you say?
my brain isn't working. Like they're, I know I'm having a hard time not doing
their
like
reason Italian. For being.
Thank you. Their purpose. Yeah. So their
modus
they're
operandi.
Like, thank you. Oh, look at you with your Latin. Oh, shit. Mm. You just brought it.
They investigate claims of supernatural.
They do. But like their point of view, I think, is hard for a modern audience to understand, because I feel like if I said I'm part of an organization that hunts down psychics and like proves that they're all frauds, your thought is our organization is like scientific minded based, and we think that all psychics are frauds and we want to just rid the world of frauds. But their point of view seems to be very much, we want to go and see all the psychics to rid the bad ones so that only the good real ones will be left, and then like society right. as a whole will be like more open and accepting, because we will have gotten rid of the frauds, and the ones that are left must therefore be legit, and so it will legitimize the spiritual concept of being able to talk to someone on the other side by getting rid of the ones who are fakes. Like I don't know. It's sort of like, right. I think it's an interesting concept, and I like.
Yeah. Well, spiritualism was super big at this time, like just super prevalent. And so you needed a service that could vet whether or not somebody was like overtly a fraud, or whether you felt like they maybe had an actual ability. And it's kind of like right now, if I were to go buy crystals from a crystal shop, I would need someone to tell me whether those are a real rose quartz crystal or whether that's just a fake rose quartz crystal.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't want to stick a fake one up your butt. It won't.
See?
It won't,
so like that's the same. Like that's apples to apples. Is like I could get a counterfeit rose quartz, or I could get the real deal. But you need somebody who's an authority in those things who can tell me.
I think it's interesting, because I feel like if we made this episode today, it's not that old, but like I would expect the episode to be like
it's 16 like, years old.
Oh. Don't do that to me. Don't. I just felt another gray hair pop out of my fucking brain. So, but I feel like, oh, I thought we were friends. So, but I feel like
Rosé makes me mean.
Apparently. So, what I like about this though is I feel like their main character is coded as autistic. I think that is correct. In later seasons and episodes that I've seen, he seems a little bit less coded that way, but in the first season, that is how I read him too, as like this man today would be would be getting some like medication. Like he's autistic, but he's also a devout Catholic, which comes out like, I mean, he crosses himself at crime scenes, and that seems to be like where it comes out. And if it comes up more in other episodes, there are episodes I haven't seen, but it was interesting to me that you would have someone who's like a very much a man of science, but also a man of deep and abiding faith. And then also he like is interacting with a faith or spiritual practice that he like does not respect, and then gets like a begrudging respect for at the end. I thought that was like an interesting like path for the characters to take. I feel like I would more expect a character to be like, no, I am an atheist and I don't believe in religion. And then I feel like even on television, you can't have like cool atheists. I'm a cool atheist, I think, generally. Like, I don't shit on people's religions as mostly, I feel like. I try mostly. But like, I feel like on television, if you have someone who's an atheist, they're always like mean atheists who want to like, I don't know, prove all religion is false and like take a dump in a church. Like, I feel like they're always like mean like that. Or you have people who are like very much of faith and they're super religious, or they're like people who are like super new agey and kooky, and we like nobody respects them and we all shit on them. And so I thought this was interesting that like Arthur Conan Doyle was a known spiritualist. He was really into this. And they like, there's some characters who roll their eyes at it a little bit, and like Murdoch rolls his eyes a little bit, but I feel like the show itself has respect for him and his beliefs. I feel like it's not, or like it could shit on him more. I don't know. Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really good, open-minded approach.
Yeah.
Open-minded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it was like, I think Arthur Conan, like Gare says it, where he's like, Murdoch asks him, I would expect a man of science to not be into this. And he's like, well, as a man of science, I feel obligated to be into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at it from a point of view of, exploring the unknown. Like, isn't that what science is all about? Like, we have these phenomena and we're investigating them. And maybe that's the best way to look at the Toronto Paranormal Society. They're investigating this from a scientific perspective. Like, we are open-minded and we will try to find causes for the phenomena that we're seeing. And if the causes are like scam artists, then okay, this person was a scam artist, but that doesn't mean that like that there is not a spiritual realm, that there is not more to this world than what we see. And we're investigating that. We're trying to find an answer. So I thought that was, I just thought it was like, I'm not a religious or spiritual person generally, but I liked the tack that this episode took, where it was like, let's approach this kindly from both sides. Like,
and
I don't
know.
And then
it left it ambiguous. Like it left it open. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether the psychic really does have psychic powers. And I liked that Murdoch got to have some closure with his dead fiance. I don't know. I liked all of that. So I'm sorry. The very first like 30 seconds of the episode, I'm trying so hard. Okay. So they go to the lady's house. She's like, there's a dead body. Here's where it is. GPS, go get it. So they're like, okay, whatever. So Gare is like, come on, Murdoch, let's just look. Like she said, the dead body's here. Let's go look. So they go look, dead body. Oh my God. It's this lady from the Toronto Paranormal Society, and she had been investigating Mrs. Pencil. Like, I guess they got down to the P's on their list, and they got to Mrs. Pencil, and they're like, let's see whether she's real or not. So it sounds like most of the other people at the society at TPS are like, yes, we think this lady is real, but the dead lady, so they think Mrs. Pencil is like a legit psychic, but the dead lady's like, I want to keep investigating. I'm not sure. And I was like, okay, like scientific method. Like, all right. So we end up finding out that so Murdoch is like, how did you possibly know? Like, it's not, you're not actually psychic. Like, what the fuck? So they go back, and Gare is like, what if we do another, hang on, hold on here. Let's do another seance. Cause I'm super into seances. Like, what if we do another seance? And like, I don't know, maybe the Toronto police pay for it, whatever. We do another seance, at this lady's house. And then you can like see whether she's a real psychic and you can like investigate and do whatever. So they go back. And they end up finding Mrs. Pencil's like little helper guy who is hidden in a wardrobe. Like he's sitting behind some coats and he's like pulling strings and shit. And he's like, oh, spooky. So we find out that this guy, whose name is like Gall, I think, it doesn't matter. We find little guy in the cupboard. We find out that he is the one who saw somebody, he doesn't know who, carrying the dead lady's body in a rug. And so he followed this guy with the body, and that's how he knew where the body was buried. And so he told Mrs. Pencil, and that's how she was able to have like, oh my God, psychic vision. So Mrs. Pencil's like, I get help sometimes, but I am, in fact, a legit psychic. It's just sometimes, I don't know, the ghosts aren't, like, zazzy enough. So, like, I got my guy, and he wanders around town, and he, like, listens for shit, and he spies on people, and he gets me information, and, like, I don't know, that's how I know stuff. But also, real psychic. Like, yes, I am a fraud, but also real psychic. So yeah. During this seance, she is the first time she channels the dead fiancé of Murdoch. And it seems like he had this fiance like before the series even started. Like she's from like we never see her during the show.
Yeah,
it's from before.
Because this so is her, episode four. So unless she died in three episodes,
which would have been like I think it would have been
tragic.
It would have been like a different, more impactful show if like this was like the fiance from season one, and then she died, and then we have a psychic episode. But like that's not the show. Like it's pleasant and kind, and like you don't. I mean, you feel sort of bad for him that he has a dead fiance, but like whatever. We're moving on. So, the psychic lady is like, oh, I'm getting a vision from your dead fiance Liza, and there's something about a silver horse. And she says, hey, from the other side. And Murdoch is like, you fucking bitch. Like, you don't get to like, you don't get to play that game with me. So, but Murdoch is kind of creeped out because he's like, she knew shit that like nobody else could know. And he's talking to his friend, the lady coroner, who at some point he will marry, but like the show is 17 seasons long. I think she like marries someone else, divorces that guy. He goes off to, Murdoch goes off to the Yukon, and then like three seasons later, they end up back together finally. Like it is like the long, like you thought Forever Night left you like hang. No, this was like, we have
it's
17
the bones
seasons.
Timeline.
Yeah. This is forever. So I know they get together. I think they are, I know they're like sort of dating by season six, but they're not like together until like 10 or 11. Cause he literally is like, oh, you're getting married? Shit. I'm going to fuck right off. And he goes to the Yukon. And there's like three episodes of him playing like Klondike Ike. It's so weird. It's so random. I love it. I love this show so much. I really do. I love it so much. So, but at this point, they just have like a, oh, oh, William. He's like, oh, Julia, let's be serious. And I'm autistic and I can't tell that you like me. Let's look at this dead body. We find out that the medium has a helper, and that's how she knew about the body, because the helper is the one that saw somebody carrying the body in a rug down the street, like saw him bury it, and then that's why that's how she gets the information to at the seance, be like, oh my god, I'm getting a psychic vision of exactly where this body is buried. So we find out that the reason that little helper guy was at the TPS was because he knew that they were investigating his boss, Mrs. Pencil. And so he's like trying to like dig up dirt and shit. And he finds out that the dead lady had been having an affair with someone else at the TPS, like a fellow member, they were having an affair. So then we're like, oh, like could that guy be the one that killed her? Cause they were going to break it off. Like, could it be her husband that killed her? And then both of those guys are like, the guy who was having the affair was like, no, like we were still together and I loved her. And her husband is a prick, but he's like, I mean, no, she was going to leave the guy. And also like, I don't care. And they're like, you don't seem like you care that much. And he's like, I'm a wasp. This is how I grieve. this is the amount of grief you will get from me. And they're like, well, that makes sense. So,
and they have him write down the make and model of his gun. And it's the worst. I'm an actor and I'm writing on this piece of paper that I've ever seen in my entire life. He's not even looking down. He's looking straight up at Murdoch and writing that. And it's just floating. The pen isn't even touching the paper. And it's like an ink. Hard. It's an ink, but like I dip it in the inkwell ink pen and he never reloads it. And
he didn't have any ink in it.
No, and he writes really elaborately with his left hand, and I was like, "Oh, it's because the killer is right-handed." I was like, "They're never left-handed unless it's significant," and they use the same device in the second.
In the next episode, yeah,
yeah.
Oh my god! These episodes they kind of blur together. They're just it's like cake. Do you know what I mean? It's like little cupcakes.
Yeah,
like it's really pleasant, and it's not too. I mean, if I eat too many, then it's like it's too much. It's too much sugar.
No, this is a good like you pick a night of the week and you watch Murdoch on Mondays. You have like Murdoch Mondays and you watch it, and then have one episode or two episodes and you're done.
Yeah, and I don't have to remember at the end of it. It's sort of like meeting Gare. I knew what happened, but I couldn't tell you what happened.
Yeah.
I feel sort of pleasant afterwards. I'm sure it was nice. But like if you ask me the actual details, I'm like, I don't know. I think Gare was there. I don't. But that's what I've been doing with getting through the episodes with Nigel, because I'm like, oh, look, here's Nigel. Oh, he's mean. He's a mean superintendent. What's going to happen this week, Nigel? I'm like, hey, Nigel. But that's what I've been doing. I'm like, if I just need to like relax a little, I put on some Murdoch Mysteries. Like, it's just, aww, it's like Law and Order, but like,
it's a cute
gentle
show
and nice.
Is this the episode where he's like, what do you, he, oh no, it's the next one where he's going to write a whole series of people investigating crimes. And they're like, no one's going to watch a show about people investigating crimes. And he's like,
he
oh
like
no,
winks at the audience. It.
It's going to be big.
It's in both. I know I wrote it down. So in both of the, like the first two episodes, yeah, he's like, I bet people would be really into like crime scene stuff and like learning how the police investigate crimes. And they're all like, that seems boring. No one's going to be into that. And he basically like turns full front to the camera and goes, wink. I'm like, oh man, it is like the next evolution of the Gare, like knowing eyebrow raise. It is the Gare, yeah, knowing eyebrow raise directly down the barrel of the fucking camera. Like, I love it. There's so many characteristics. Okay. We're going to, okay. So yada, yada, yada. So they're doing the investigation. I do like that they had like, they were talking about the history of forensics and Lacassang. And I guess he was the guy that figured out how to compare bullets to see if they had been shot by the same weapon. So they shoot a gun into a barrel of water, and then they pull the bullet out and they look at the striations, and then they look at the striations on the bullets that killed the lady, and they're like, oh yeah, this was from the same gun. And I was like, that's kind of cute. Like, I feel like sometimes when you care, you are giving us like actual historical, you know, interesting tidbits. And then when you don't care, you're like, yeah, I don't know, I guess Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's English now, deal with it. I'm just like, oh, okay, you give and you take. So
I liked how they nerded out together. That was really,
yes,
cute. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, yes, because the bullets could match. Oh my God. You read about that too?
I like that they did that. So they take their barrel, their like big, big wooden barrel of water, and it's in the holding cell area. So it's like a big stone room with metal bars. So like, The exact opposite of a pod lab, like a room where you're going to have the most, yeah, echoes possible, and they shoot off their fucking guns. So like all the police officers and the rest of the station are like, are we under attack? What the hell's going on? And they like have to run into the room, and then like autistic and Gare, who's super into drama, are like, what? Are we bothering you? And like everyone else is like twitching and shit and like freaking out because they just thought that like like the mob was going to shoot up the police station. And then they're like, well, we're investigating. We're science bros. It's like, perfect. I wish I, like, so in later episodes, like I said, they toned down the autism for Murdoch. I wish they had not toned it down, because I think it's really cool to have like an autistic coded hero in an old timey setting where like they just kind of seem to accept him. They're like, that's who this guy is, yeah, and he's effective and he solves crimes, and we're cool with like every once in a while they're like, You're trying too hard, but it's because he's like Sherlock Holmesing things. He's like, no, I see the discrepancies that you guys don't see. It's not like,
yeah, Murdoch with the blackboard again.
Yeah, yeah. They may criticize him for being so thorough, but it's never like a, you're neurodivergent, we don't like you. I don't know. The show is like cupcakes. Like I said, it's just so gentle and nice. Anyways, so blah blah fucking blah. They realize that the gun that killed the lady is a gun that her boyfriend had. So they're like, oh. So they run to where the boyfriend lives, and the boyfriend is dead, face down on his table, like you said.
Oh, no, they go to Arthur Conan Doyle's thing, like his talk that he's going to give, and he's not there. Mr. Waters isn't there. And they're like, does anybody know
that's
where
right.
he could be?
Yeah, they go to look for him, and then they go to his house.
And everyone's like, oh, I don't know. And they're all giving conflicting stories. Like, was he broken up? Was he okay? We don't know. Everybody's giving different answers. And so they're like, yeah, we'll go check it out. When they get there, he's killed himself.
Yeah. Well, so we think.
But he used his right hand, and he's not right-handed. And I was like, oh, that gun was in his right hand, which means he didn't do it. And Matt was like,
oh, you made Matt watch Murdoch Mysteries with you?
And my mom. And I'm like, yeah, when they write with their left hand, it always matters.
I like that you like were paying attention. I just like the show for me was just like colors and sounds. Yay, lights and colors. Yeah. So they see him face down on the desk, whomp. And like you said, the gun is in the wrong hand. But it's the same gun. So it's his gun from which the bullet came that shot the lady, and the bullet from the gun in his hand is the same bullet that was used to kill him. So the same gun. And then we end up blah blah fucking blah. It doesn't matter how they get there. We don't need to know. But they realize that the Conrad Hunt guy, so the guy who'd been hanging out at the Pensol seances, He knew that Mrs. Pensall was being investigated by the Toronto Paranormal Society. And he was like, oh, shit, if they declare her like a fake psychic, then I guess she won't be able to be a psychic anymore. And I was like, is that really like the people who go to a psychic? Are they like, are you a legit psychic? Do you have your like Better Business Bureau sticker on the door? No. OK, I guess we won't go to you anymore. But whatever. We'll just accept that as the premise. And he's like, that's not going to work. So what I need to do is I need to kill the lady investigating her. So he's the one that kills her. And then he's like, they might eventually figure out it's me. Spoiler alert, they would never have figured out it was you, dude. They were never gonna popped up for like, you're like a Scooby-Doo mystery. Like you popped up for 2 seconds and then disappeared for like 80 minutes. They were never gonna figure out it was you. But he's like, oh no, they were gonna know. So he's like, what if I kill her boyfriend and make it look like suicide? So everyone will be like, oh yeah, he was distraught that she was gonna leave him. So he killed her and then he killed himself, dunzo, whatever. And so Murdoch and Gare and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, they have like, that's the theory they come up with. That's the premise. So they're like, how can we trap this guy? So they do the best / worst thing I've ever seen, because this episode, like up until now, is like cupcakes and fairies. And it's real gentle, even though we've got a dead lady rolled up in a fucking carpet. It's like the gentle cupcake version of that. So, Gare and Murdoch are like, well, remember how we did like a fake seance earlier, because we were going to try it. We thought maybe Mrs. Pensall was involved in the murder. And so we were like trying to figure out if she's a real psychic or not. We're going to trap her. What if we do that again? We get Mrs. Pensall to come in on it and we have her. This is so fucked up. I love it so much. What if we have her pretend to be channeling this guy's dead son? So Mr. Hunt, his dead son, James. And we have the dead son basically call his dad out on being a murderer, and we see if, I don't know, if that gets him to confess. And I was like, oh, that's so fucking dark. So then I thought, well, this episode, again, it's like cupcakes and fairies and shit. So I thought it would be like real gentle, like, dad, I think you killed someone. Oh my God, I confess. No, this goes Divya hard. I wrote down, I didn't pay attention to anything else in this episode. I wrote down fucking hardcore quotes. So they're at the seance. It's just Mr. Hunt talking to Mrs. Pensall, and they're sitting there at their table. They're having their like moment. Mrs. Pensall's like, oh my God, a spirit's coming through. It's your dead son, James. And then she goes, Father, there is darkness in your soul. I have come to say goodbye. There is a river of blood. I cannot cross it. And I was like, are you fucking, what? Fucking
there's
what?
There's a river of blood and I cannot cross it.
I did hear the Divya voice in my head. I swear I did. I absolutely did. I cannot do the Divya voice justice the way you do. There is a river of blood. I cannot cross it. He's like, I did this for you so she could keep talking to you. And I was like, nothing was going to prevent her from talking to you, like fucking at all. If you wanted to go to her house and like slip money under the door and have her pretend to be your dead son, she could have kept doing that. Like she wasn't going to go to prison. I mean, this wasn't like, they weren't like, you're being investigated by the cops for fraud and she's going to go to prison. Do you know what I mean? Like it was just like the informal psychic nerd society who were going to be like, oh, you're not psychic enough. Like nobody gives a shit. Like they're the super nerds. Like you would have been fine. And instead you murdered two people and you wrapped a lady up in a rug and you made a guy look like he had committed suicide. You went hard. You went so fucking hard. So, oh my God. So, so that wraps up the main thing, blah, blah, fucking blah. Who gives a shit? So we have Murdoch. His little journey is at the beginning, he like doesn't believe in psychics. He's like, this is all bullshit. And then Gare gets to have like a, like you said, like, isn't science investigating? And isn't that what we're doing? And Murdoch's like, well, I guess. Okay. So then we have the first meeting with the psychic where she's like, I'm channeling your dead girlfriend. And he's like, And then Murdoch goes back to her house. I really like this scene. He goes back to her house like in the dead of night, like her personal house, not like, I don't think her.
Because he remembers the horse.
Yeah. Yeah, but like it wasn't clear to me whether her psychic seance room was like in her same home. Maybe it was. Maybe that's how he knew where it was. But like, at any rate, he's like at her home, like in the dead of night. He knocks on the door and she's like, are you here to like murder me or arrest me? Or like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B? Like, what are we doing? And he's like, can you channel my dead fiance again? And she's like, well, you're a distraught autistic man. It's the middle of the night. You're a cop. You have a gun. Yeah, let's do this. Let's do this right now. So they have like a really nice, sweet, like seance, just the two of them. And she channels the dead fiance, Liza. And Liza's like, you need to move on. Like, you need to let me go. I'm in a better place. We will see each other in the next life, William. And the way that they film it, I thought was really kind of poignant and nice, because like, it is, it's supposed to be the psychic lady just like channeling the dead woman. So it's just this, it's just the psychic lady sitting there talking. But anytime it's the psychic lady speaking in the voice of Liza, the camera just goes like a tight close-up shot of just her mouth.
Yeah.
So like, you, it like, it lets the audience forget that this is this other lady. Like, you're just, you're like Liza mouth. Like, it's just Liza mouth talking to me. And yeah. I just, it was so,
it's really nice good
and poignant. Yeah. I thought it was really well acted. I thought, like, I was really invested. Like, I, like, the audience doesn't know Liza. Like, we never knew their relationship. We never got to see that. But like, you gave me this one little scene where you really got me invested in like the emotional side of William Murdoch and like his whole backstory and like his poor, fragile, broken heart, which Dr. Julia Ogden will mend at some point in the future. And you're just, I don't know. It's like him and her being like, I release you. Now you release me. I thought was really kind of nice. And then later when Murdoch goes like, you, he's like, he's into it now. And he's like your first taste was free. He's like a drug addict now. He's like, no, I like, yeah, he's on the path to becoming what Conrad Hunt was. And I like that the lady, that Mrs. Pencil, was like, no, like she said, like your dead fiance said, this was it. And so it was it. And you have to move on. And I am not going to like ring the bell to call her. And she is not going to come back to me. Like, we're done now. And I liked that because I feel like if I were writing this episode, it would have been just like another scam. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would have been, yeah, like this is how you hook them. This is how you bring in the skeptics, and now you have them for life and you can bleed them for forever. So I liked that this was sort of like, I don't know. I like the ambiguity of this episode. I don't like the next episode that it has like an actual ghost. I like that in this episode, it left it sort of like, is this just ambiguous, a lady who is like, as much as I feel like in real life, psychics just take advantage of people, I like that in this, it's sort of like either she's really a psychic or she's someone that is providing something akin to therapy and like helping people like process their trauma. I don't know, it was just very sweet and nice.
Yeah, I liked it.
And I liked it. And I like that that Gare got to do his eyebrow in all this. And that when he does, when he finally does that speech at TPS that we talked, that you mentioned earlier, he gets to just like go full on, like I'm a Gare performance and I get to be performing to a fake audience. Yeah. Here
he
I am.
He gets to go full Gare a bunch this episode. He gets to flourish. He gets to like flourish about the stage. Like, he gets to work the room. He gets to flirt with a bunch of women because he gets to flirt with Julia Ogden a bunch.
Which he does more, I feel like, in the next episode. But yeah, like, I feel like anytime he's around a human woman, he's like, he can't not be Gare. He's like, hello.
Yeah, no, it just leaks out the edges.
Yeah. And I liked that that it's the purest characteristic where, like, he gets to play someone who is famous and, like, beloved
and everyone,
by everyone.
And everyone loves him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Oh, my God. Gare character name here. you're the greatest insert job here.
We love you so much. Everybody loves you. We've all only ever loved you.
Right? It's funny, like, the more we go through this, the more I'm like, wait, is he also a famous beloved person in this episode, just like last episode and the episode before? Like, I just, like, how is your whole career being horny and also playing the best at being horny? Like, I just, like, it's so good. It's so good. How is this a career? No one told me about this career path in high school. I wouldn't have gone to law school. Are you kidding me? If I could just be beloved and horny and people pay me like sandwiches and booze, that would, like, what a life. What an amazing life. So, okay. But, okay. So I think we covered the characteristic. He gets to do like knowing smile with like knowing smile, eyebrow raise, staring directly at the audience. He gets to be a character that is not just famous and not just beloved, but beloved because he is famous and famous because he's beloved and everyone just wants to like throw their panties at him.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to have
flirt with every woman.
Yeah. A little bit of the flirting, which we'll have more on in the next episode, but like I feel like that's correct. Some flirting. And he gets to talk, he gets to have like a discussion about faith, which I feel like comes up in like a lot of Gare performances. Like you have like goofy shit, goofy shit, goofy shit. And then he's like stomach punch. Like thoughtful conversation on faith. And you're like, where did that come from? Like, I feel like that's, I feel like there's, I don't know a better way to describe it. And like, I think we'll have this more in the next part of our Murdoch discussion. But like, I feel like a characteristic is him being in something where like, you don't think it's going to be like a thoughtful, like a thing that you like have to like think about and have an emotional reaction to. Like he's in a Murdoch Mysteries. He's in a Frankie Drake where you're like, this is going to be sweet and fluffy and garbage. And I don't have to pay attention. And it'll just be like, goofy shit. So you walk in thinking goofy shit. He gives you goofy shit until like 2 minutes before the end. And he's like, hey, guess what? I'm actually an amazing actor. Fucking soul punch. And you're like, what? Well, where did that come from? What? Oh, my heart, my brain, my thoughts. I can't even like I don't know a way to describe that. But like, do you know what I'm like the phenomenon of like Garrett being like, I'm going to half ass it and then I'm going to double ass it. And you're just like, ah, was not ready. It was not prepared. I don't
think almost as if he, I don't know. Maybe he knows we can't withstand an entire episode of his full on, like dialed up to 11. So he's like, I'll go 6 and then I can go 10 and it'll feel like 11. And I can save 11 for the stage.
So conservation of effort, is that a characteristic? Yeah. Conservation
yes.
of effort.
Yeah. Yes.
Intentional.
We know what you can do, sir. We know what he's capable of. It's good. He's good in this. He's having so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Although that soul patch is still really, it still bothers me because it sticks fine. Straight the fuck out from his face. I just need everyone just to like watch it.
Just look at his waistcoat. Forward. Just look at his waistcoat.
They do dress him. Murdoch Mysteries better. Definitely has a good clothing budget because like everyone always looks really good. Like everyone, they tailor everything nicely. Even the like weird facial hair because everyone has to have like extra fucking facial hair and like extra wigs and shit. Like even all that, it doesn't. It's not like I love being human. You know, I love being human. I like would run through traffic to see Sam Witwer, but like. When they put sideburns on him, they were like shaved off a cat. They were rough. They were bad. But like everyone has sideburns in Murdoch Mysteries. Like every single male character has to have like sideburns of some level of skanky or not. And I just they are good. They like quality. So like even though there's a lot of like wigs, other than the one fucking directly forward facing soul patch, everyone looks good. So that's a characteristic too. I feel like weird facial hair. So okay. So what do I? This is like pleasant and fine and I liked it and it made me want to watch more. So like 7.5 sloppy, yeah, wet kisses, good. Like,
I like it.
Quality. We got characteristics. We didn't, I feel like even though Gare is in this a lot, I feel like he's not like, he's more impactful in the later episodes. This one, he's just sort of like, hey, I'm here. What's up? Where's my paycheck? Psychics. Bow-bow. Like, it's like, okay, sure, yeah. Fine. So what would you, I'm sorry. Yeah. What would you rate this?
I'm going to go 4 raised eyebrows out of 5 and I'm docking it an eyebrow only because he never actually makes out with anybody, which I feel is like the number one characteristic.
No, the core of a Gare performance. Yeah.
Yeah. No, is like every woman wants him. And I definitely feel like there's a, I'm not mad he's here from Julia, but there's not a like, I would fuck this man. I would fuck this man so hard right now.
Spoiler alert for the audience. We'll get there next episode. We'll get there.
So
I like the next episode so much. I mean, this one I like. I like this one a lot, but like, please stay tuned for like part 2 of our Murdoch Mysteries deep dive because the next one, he's like, I see you guys notice my characteristics. What if I raise those up to 11 and then I raise that up to 30? Like it's so big. Ugh.
Yeah. And I add the secret, not often used characteristic of slightly screwball comedy. Like I add a little bit of goofy flair. Like I'm a serious character, but I'm also kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like he likes to add the little joke to the character. Like when he's in the interrogation room and he keeps interrupting him and you're like, oh, I believe it. I 100% believe. And I almost believe it's improv. Like he was doing that scene
believe it was improv because like Yannick Bisson looks like a vein is going to pop in his fucking head.
It's probably like, not this. That's why he didn't come back until season 6.
I need a break. Only I can be the most beautiful man on screen. And like, none of the women can hear me. They can't remember their lines.
And then he snuck in and burned Gare's mustache and soul patch. That's why they don't have it.
Oh my God. So just as like a heads up to our, I assume one listener. So next week we will be discussing season one, episode 9, Belly Speaker. And also briefly at the end, because it's weird and doesn't matter, season 6, episode 4, A Study in Sherlock. You're gonna like watch the first episode and like soak it all in and watch season 6 like on fast forward with the sound off, because it's just
weird. 29 minutes before he comes in. I think he comes in right around the half hour mark.
Yeah, he's in it for about 30 seconds.
And he just pops up and he's like, "Hi, I'm Arthur Conan Doyle. You're not actually Sherlock Holmes, bitch." And then he just leaves. And then he shows up at the end. He's like, "Where'd the guy who thought he was Sherlock Holmes go? I wanted to talk to him about what I'm going to write in my next book."
My favorite part is the comment that you made to me earlier where you're like, did they just like find him next door, sober him up, and plop him on stage? Like he looks like he just came out of a nap, and he's wearing like a costume from clearly like some other performance. Like I was looking at this and I was like, I know that there was like one summer in, I don't know if it was Toronto or Stratford, but he was doing like a one-man play of Dylan Thomas's, like playing Dylan Thomas in like a one-man show. And I'm looking at him and I was like, I feel like that haircut is your Dylan Thomas haircut. Like, I feel like, did you just steal? Like, I don't know if Dylan Thomas was a man who wore a lot of boater hats, like straw boater hats, but like, I don't think Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was. So, like, did you just like steal the outfit and the hat from your other,
no,
from your other show?
It's the secret long term characteristic that we don't get to talk about very much on this because we don't do any of his long series, but where he cuts his hair at the beginning of the season and he doesn't fucking cut it again.
Fuck you if you don't make it a haircut. Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, the no, forever fuck night. You.
Well, we have some like longer series coming up that we're probably going to have to talk about in chunks because like some of the series he's in like 22 episodes and I'll never be able to get through 22 episodes in something approaching 2 hours. But like, well, I will keep an eye out because I forgot that like in Forever Night, he has the short hair at the beginning and then he's like, fuck it.
Always.
And he has like long, luxurious big curls towards the end.
Like when we saw him in, like if all the promo images for Grand Magic, he's like cut, like his hair is cut. And then when we saw him on closing night, his hair was this hair. It was the hair from season 6 of Murdoch Mysteries where it was like shoulder length. And you're like,
I did notice. I was like, oh, why does he look nothing like he did in the pro? Like, why did they style him so differently? And you're right. I think it's a characteristic of him just being like, fuck it. I'm not going to a barber.
He cuts his hair at the beginning. And then he's like, you get what you fucking get. Cause I only get one. It's bad luck. I'm not going to cut it again.
Maybe he's been to too many female barbers and they start passing out halfway through and he's like, no, my neck, like you're gonna stab me. And he like can't. It's too dangerous for his safety. For his safety, he gets one haircut and there's like there have to be like 3 guys around him. So like when the woman starts passing out, they like fan her. The fucking fumes that come out of his body, the like, Gare sex magic.
Why is this so hard?
That's what she said.
I should be able to just get a haircut. Why is it always like this? There's just women passed out. It's like in a swath around him. I don't understand.
Is life easier for mortal men? Every episode we record, I like start off going, I hope he never hears this. And then by the time we get to the end, I'm like, you know what? I hope he hears this. I hope he's like, yes. Yes, you understand my trauma. You understand what life is like for me. People just pass out like fucking flies everywhere I go.
I think even in Dracula's series by the end, isn't his hair wild? Like after they unshellac it?
Oh, yeah. I am so excited to talk about Dracula with you. But yeah, when he's a vampire, his hair is like hard shellacked directly flat to the top of his skull. And then at the end, spoiler alert, he's briefly human again. And to show him as human, they like unshellac his hair. And I don't know if it was like super long or if it was like that thing where you try too hard to like get the hairspray and shit off. And so your hair becomes kind of wild because like you've stripped all the shit off of it. So he has full on like 90s exploding poof curl fro going on, like to really like highlight the difference between a vampire man and a human man. And the difference is just like his hair is huge all of a sudden. It's like a huge lion's mane.
It's wild because he doesn't have that much hair. Like his hair isn't that thick, and yet I don't know, I shouldn't say anything because my hair is not that thick, but I have plenty of volume. So
Your hair also knows how to take up space in a room. And I'm jealous because my hair is like limp Morticia Adams hair. Like it has no life to it. But like you got some Gare hair that just wants to be seen and known.
It has to be seen. In fact, the longer I go without washing it, the more body it has. So
I hate you. I hate you,
Herbal
Essences.
It will stand straight fucking up. Like, don't be a narc.
Yeah. You know, actually, I've reformulated my opinion on that. Be a narc if you want to be a narc. Just don't fucking tell me. That's the trauma.
Don't
that's
tell trauma me you response. Told him.
Yeah. Do whatever you're going to do, man. Like, I'm not your boss. I'm not your mom. Like, be who you're going to be. do what you're going to do, but do not in any way like involve me or tell me, because I can't, like, emotionally, I can't handle that. Like, when I thought the guy from Monsters, Madness and Magic was going to tell him we exist, I like threw up for 3 days. I can't, I can't, I have so much stress in my body. Like, I live like a little gerbil. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm always stressed. Like, there's predators everywhere. Like, I can't add in. And also, we're going to make Gare listen to you talk about his dick. Like, I can't have that in my soul. If you want to do it, like, do what you're going to do. I don't care. But, like, just don't leave me out of it. Like, just don't let me know. It'll be a surprise when we show up this summer at Stratford with, like, merch with our own faces on it. Hey, Gare, we got this for you. Okay. So, yeah, just, you know, tell people if you're going to tell people, but don't fucking tell me. So
until next time, friends.
On that note, friends.
Bye.
Bye.